Now, while recreational marijuana is now legal in more than a dozen states, it's still illegal at the federal level. Last week, the House of Representatives passed a bill that would decriminalize the drug nationally. The bill is not expected to go anywhere in the Senate, but it's still considered a big moment in the story of marijuana in the country and a sign of major change in public perception of the drug. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think marijuana should be legalized or at least decriminalized at the national level? Why or why not? Do you think Wisconsin should join the states legalizing the drug? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. John Hudak is Deputy Director of the Center for Effective Public Management and a Senior Fellow in Governance Studies at the Brookings Institution. He's the author of the book Marijuana, A Short History. John, welcome back to Central Time.
Good to be back.
Well, let's put this bill in some context. Has there ever been anything like this passing either chamber of the U.S. Congress?
Absolutely not. This was a historic legislative action by the U.S. House. There has only been one other bill related to cannabis reform, a freestanding bill related to cannabis reform that has ever passed the Chamber of Commerce. That was the Marijuana Banking Act that passed in late 2019. But this is a much more comprehensive piece of legislation.
And tell us what it does.
So it does a lot. The bill is called the Marijuana Opportunity Reinvestment and Expungement Act. And what it does first is it removes cannabis from the federal schedules, which essentially removes all criminal penalties related to cannabis at the federal level in the United States. It doesn't necessarily set up a legalization system in the way that you've seen states, your neighboring state of Illinois, states like Nevada, Colorado, and others do. But it removes all of those federal penalties. It also has provisions that work with states that have already set up legal systems or will set up legal systems in the future to make sure that things like packaging and labeling and testing is standardized or at least meets certain provisions that are set forth by the federal government. It taxes cannabis with a federal tax of 5%, at least to start. And that tax revenue then is used to reinvest in communities that have been hit hardest by the drug war. And finally, it expunges all low-level nonviolent cannabis crimes at the federal level. That is retroactive and for anyone currently facing those charges.
And the state of affairs now, we have states, as we know, that have legalized medical marijuana, recreational marijuana, and that's legal at the state level, but not at the federal level. Technically, the federal government could try to enforce marijuana laws in those states. It's, in effect, chosen not to under the Obama and Trump administrations. Is that basically where we are right now?
That's absolutely right. So medical and adult use cannabis dispensaries across the nation are operating legally in their states, but each of them is violating federal law very explicitly. And you said it right. The federal government could go into states and start shutting down these systems and arresting people, seizing assets, et cetera. But they have opted not to. And part of the reason why is that the system has just gotten so large. There are now 15 states, plus the District of Columbia, that have legalized cannabis for adult use, and nearly 40 states with full-fledged medical cannabis systems. And so the ability of the feds to shut this down is limited, and under the Constitution, the feds cannot compel a state government to enforce federal law. And so, in a sense, they're on their own, and the resources just aren't there to do that.
Now, this is all the U.S. House, controlled by Democrats, gotten a little bit of Republican support and a little bit of Democratic opposition in the vote here. But that brings us to the Senate, which nobody, I think, John, expects to pass this.
Yeah, no one who's thinking seriously or is a serious observer of D.C. politics expects the Senate to even take this legislation up. I think right now it's hard to see the MORE Act, even if it were to come up, getting to 50 votes in the Senate, but it would also, of course, have to get 60 votes to beat a filibuster. But Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is not an individual particularly in favor of cannabis reform, and because of that, the MORE Act is dead. And of course, with the Congress wrapping up at the end of the year, Even if more were to move forward next year, it would require the House to take it up and pass it again.
That said, though, the fact that this is voted on in the House, I mean, it wasn't that long ago where if you were a politician and you said, yeah, marijuana legalization in any form, you would immediately define yourself as a fringe politician, right? This is not something people would stick their necks out for.
Yeah, you were a fringe politician. You were probably coming from a very liberal city. Earl Blumenauer is someone who has been advocating for cannabis reform for almost 50 years in the Oregon legislature and the U.S. House. And, you know, he represents Portland. That's the type of community that you would expect someone to be coming from if they were supporting this, you know, 15 or 20 years ago. But now it's mainstream. You know, if we look just at election night, four states passed adult use cannabis or recreational cannabis programs. They are San Diego, Montana, Arizona, and New Jersey. States that are very different from one another. And I think it shows the diversity, not just with regard to what is happening at the state level, but the diversity in the coalition of people supporting cannabis reform nationwide.
You said San Diego, South Dakota. Was that the other state?
Oh, sorry, South Dakota. My mind has been on San Diego today. They just swore in a new mayor today in a sort of historic moment. So my mind was on San Diego, but you're
same
right.
Same initials.
South Dakota.
John Hudak is with us from the Brookings Institution. We're looking at marijuana decriminalization, a bill passed the U.S. House that would do that at the federal level. Not expected, as we heard, to pass the Senate. You could join in with your thoughts and your questions at 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Leaf is with us in Eau Claire. Leaf, hi.
Hi. So my question was if you think there are any cons to the decriminalization or legalization of marijuana?
John, downsides.
Thanks for that, Leaf. You know, obviously with any area of public policy, there are positives and benefits. And, you know, we need to think about how to minimize the risks that exist with any of the public policy changes that we enact. And with cannabis use, with cannabis legalization, we have to worry about use in certain contexts. Who's using? Are youth using? Are individuals who are prone to or have experienced cannabis use disorder or dependence, addiction? Are they using in higher rates or in heavy amounts? So guarding against those types of things, making sure that the public is informed about the law, about the products, about what the product will do to you, when it's okay and responsible to use and when it's not, for instance, when driving or operating heavy machinery, caring for children, et cetera. And so, yeah, there are downsides, but there's a lot of downsides to prohibition as well. You know, we have hundreds of thousands of individuals, disproportionately Black and Brown Americans, who are locked up every year because of cannabis-related offenses. And so, you know, I think most Americans recognize that all public policy choices have some risks to them. Most Americans, the supermajority of Americans, have decided that prohibition has failed public policy, and trying something different with safeguards in place is probably the better step forward.
Thanks for that call. We had a caller from southern Wisconsin who couldn't stay on the line who wanted to say his wife has Alzheimer's, so he drives to Illinois to get her marijuana. Not legal in Wisconsin, legal in Illinois. He says he doesn't feel comfortable doing it, but it seems to be the only thing that brings her some relief. Can you talk about the interstate issues this is raising, John? You've got states like Wisconsin with no legalization, all of our neighbors having at least medical, mostly with recreational.
Yeah, this is something that happens in a lot of parts of the country, and the caller's experience is not a unique one. Living in a state where prohibition is in place and driving to a state where you can get the substance either for medical relief or for personal use, and crossing that state line into a state where it's illegal. It's also obviously illegal to cross state lines with it as well. It's actually one of the areas that the Department of Justice considers problematic, even in this non-enforcement scenario that they've set up. But the reality is that, like your caller, there are a lot of Americans who argue that they or family members get medical relief from the use of cannabis. And a lot of people are willing to go to the ends of the earth if it's going to help a loved one or help themselves. And I think that's a pretty common situation in the United States with this patchwork system right now.
Let's bring on another caller. Kathy is with us in Oconomowoc. Kathy, hi.
Hi. Yeah, I think it's a really good idea. Not that I use or anything like that, but I know a lot of people that do. And I think for just, home use and stuff, I think it'd be fine to be able to get it. It would free up the court systems. I think it would free up a lot of police time. And also, but I think they should increase the tax on it. If they can afford to smoke, then they need to pay a little more to cover people that don't handle it well. So.
Kathy, thanks a lot for that call. I think you mentioned 5% was what the House had passed, a 5% federal tax in addition to whatever, I guess, state and local governments would do. Can you talk about that, John, and then what you said were the benefits potentially for courts and police time?
That's right. The MORE Act puts in place a 5% federal tax, which would lay on top of the existing state and local taxes. Now, I think your point is an important one, Kathy, that if users are going to access cannabis, then that tax revenue can be used in important ways, to keep roads safe, to assist with mental health and addiction, have better education programs, et cetera. And that's all important. But it is also important to recognize that there are some competing issues around the tax issue itself. And that is, one of the goals of legalization in the states is to help displace or get rid of the black market. And people don't think of it this way, but marijuana users are rational actors. They think about price when they consider where and under what circumstances they're going to purchase. And so if you raise taxes too high, it's going to make potential customers more likely to stick with the black market if it's cheaper, particularly if it's quite a bit cheaper. And so that balance needs to be had between getting the amount of tax revenue that's necessary to meet the goals that you want, while also recognizing that it is a consumer market where consumers are going to be making choices, and part of that choice is based on price.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to John Hudak from the Brookings Institution, author of the book Marijuana, A Short History, talking about moves at the federal level to decriminalize the drug. The U.S. House passed a bill that would do that. U.S. Senate, probably not gonna. The goal to help communities that have been disproportionately affected by enforcement of existing laws. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Should the federal government decriminalize marijuana? Should Wisconsin do something like that? Medical, recreational, all or none? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about marijuana legislation in the U.S. House. John Hudak is with us from the Brookings Institution. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions about what's going on and your opinions about what should be going on. Jonathan joins us next in Janesville. Jonathan, hi.
Hey.
Hi, go ahead, Jonathan.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What did you want to bring up?
I was just bringing up, I wanted to shed some positivity instead of anything negative towards either on a federal level or a local level towards marijuana. I think it could be extremely beneficial in doing, if you can make the right plans and tax everything correctly, I think you could put it back into the schools. You can put it back into small local businesses that are struggling. I just think, the positives definitely outweigh the negatives in a situation like this.
Jonathan, thanks a lot for that call. Talk a little bit about the economics and potential economic impact here, John.
I think, Jonathan sounds like what a lot of voters sound like in states that are considering legalization or that have legalized, and they're really focused on tax revenue. It's important to put forward a caveat that the tax revenue is significant from cannabis programs, but it's not something that's necessarily going to balance a state's budget or, especially in the environment that we're in, get a state out of the type of budget holes that have been created by the pandemic and the recession. But it is money that the state would not be accessing otherwise if they hadn't legalized. But the economic impact of legalization goes far further than the tax revenue base that it creates. It also creates above ground economic activity. And so you're taxing wages. You are seeing an entire market pop up, but then a market pop up around the cannabis market that serves it, whether it's the construction of dispensaries or grow operations, whether it's electricians or others, accountants, lawyers, et cetera. And so there is a ripple effect into the economy beyond just the market itself that I think we know from experience, at least, can have fairly significant positive effects for a state and a locality.
Jonathan, thanks for the call. We'll go next to Jen with us in Waukesha. Jen, hi.
Hello. Your caller was just kind of touching on this with the economic benefits, but he's stated multiple times that the measure to decriminalize has passed the House of Representatives, but is not expected to pass in the Senate. And I'm kind of wondering if there's any idea as to why that seems to be the way that the Senate is leaning, and especially in light of the fact that there are states that have decriminalized, and you can see that there are definitely economical and tax benefits.
Thanks for the call. John, what are the reasons for U.S. senators and others opposing decriminalization?
Jen, it's a great question. There are a lot of senators, some from mostly Republicans, but some Democrats too, who have either outright opposed cannabis reform or have suggested that they're not comfortable with it. And that is a question that I get asked a lot. Why is it that an issue that is so popular, 68% of Americans in the United States support full-scale legalization at the national level, and why then is there this disconnect between the public and their elected officials on this? And part of the reason is a generational one. There are a lot of older Americans who represent us in the United States Congress, especially the United States Senate, and older Americans are disproportionately less likely to support cannabis reform than younger Americans are. That's true in the public, and it's true in the U.S. Senate as well. At the same time, voters are not really holding elected officials to account over their views on cannabis. At least we're not really seeing that yet. There are 50 issues ahead of the marijuana in the line of issues that voters care about and that they're going to hold their elected officials accountable on. And so until there's more generational change in the Congress, and until there is a greater respect for this issue by elected officials, we're going to see that disconnect endure.
Thanks a lot for that call. We'll go to Dan now in La Crosse. Dan, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What
you want to bring? Say that I'm not against. I'm not against decriminalization, but I would have concerns. I don't quite think we're ready for it yet as a society. We don't have controls in place to keep it from getting into hands of children or younger people. And then the other thing, most importantly, is, we don't have ways of testing for it. So we've had huge issues with, drunk driving and people driving under the influence of alcohol. We don't have any breathalyzer test or any way of testing for the use of marijuana, not only while you're driving, but, a lot of employers have implemented drug testing for the safety of personnel and for the safety of the workers.
Sure. Dan, we don't have much time, but I want to throw that to John. John, how have the states that have legalized recreational marijuana dealt with those important issues that Dan brought up?
There are systems in place within the states to guard against this. The first and most important one, particularly with the issue of youth use, is that dispensaries require identification for a purchase in a way that drug dealers don't. Now, that doesn't create a perfect system. You could have proxy buyers where someone over the age of 21 goes in and purchases for someone younger, and there's really no way to guard against that. But it's important to note that those behaviors are already happening now under a system of prohibition. What I like to say is that cannabis legalization is not going to bring cannabis to communities. Cannabis already exists in every community in the United States. It's just a matter of being able to manage it differently with a regulated system. With regard to Dan's point about workplace testing and workplace safety, every state that has legalized cannabis has allowed businesses to be able to maintain drug-free environments. So in the same way, if you are coming into work drunk, You can be fired for that. And if they are doing drug testing and you test positive for cannabis, employers have the option to use that as a fireable offense. Now, they're not required to, but they can maintain that. And so I think there's a concern in the lead up to legalization initiatives or legislative debates about what's going to happen to businesses. The reality is that business practice around drug testing doesn't change at all post-legalization.
Thanks for that call. In our last few moments, John, do you see a road from here to actual federal decriminalization with both chambers of commerce signing off or chambers of Congress signing off on it?
I think it's really an eventuality. The current Senate and really the next Senate is not going to be one where we're seeing cannabis reform happening. But, you know, the writing is on the wall. As I said earlier, generational change is a really serious force. We're seeing this effort led largely by Democrats, but it is a bipartisan issue, particularly in the public. And while we might not see legalization happen in the next year or two, we will certainly see it happen in sometime in the near future because the stars are aligning. And once individuals in key leadership positions in the Congress age out, choose to retire, and they're replaced by people who are more focused on where the mainstream view on this issue is, we're going to see some real progress happen.
John, thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you.
John Hudak is Deputy Director of the Center for Effective Public Management and Senior Fellow in Governance Studies at the Brookings Institution. He's the author of the book Marijuana, A Short History. We talked to him today about the significance of the House passing a national marijuana legalization bill. Again, probably won't get passed in the Senate.